only the essentials.
Just the essentials.
I only brought the essentials.
I never leave home without all the essentials.
You're listening to Pop Culture Essentials, your guide to the latest movies.
I love this movie.
Oh, I love this movie.
Games. TV.
You know what else,
Streaming.
Chrissy, wake up!
And pop culture news.
Pop culture and current events.
So sit back, relax,
and let your host, Dallas Star, Nick and Pete take you through this week's Pop Culture Essentials.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Essentials for a very special episode. We are going to not have any of our news or our two favorite games. Not even the box office. We're just here to talk about a little movie, little indie flick. I doubt you've heard of it. No. It's called the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Essentials. I think I'm keeping that in there.
I think it's worth it.
I'm Alistair. With me today is Nick.
Hello, Alistair. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm obviously keen to get on the ginger wines.
Yep, he's on the ginger wines. I'm on the blueberry vodkas. Life is good.
And it's not even 2:30 in the
It's not even 2:30. The life of freelance journalists.
How good.
Now, I did want to talk about the box office before we jump into our episode titled Evil Dead Rise.
Yes.
So the last time we were on, we were talking about the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, it's done pretty well for itself.
It's made a bit of cash,
just
so to say.
Bit. So it's cracked the 700 million worldwide number.
Like, every day I see the article pop up, I'm like, another 100 million, another 100 million. Because how long has it been out for? Two weeks.
Yeah. It's crazy. Not even out in Japan yet, which is like...
That's, yeah.
I'm like, Japan was the one that boosted Aquaman to get over $1 billion. Imagine what this is going to do in its hometown.
Unbelievable. Yeah. When is the release date supposed to be for Japan? Is it quite soon?
Next weekend. So right, it's like a big holiday period there. That's why they pushed it out.
And makes sense.
We got it because of Easter. So it makes sense, right?
Totally.
So if we're looking at the Aussie box office, last week, Super Mario Brothers movie made $14.41 million Australia.
That's a lot. For an Australian box office, that's a lot.
So its current total in Australia is $35.27 million.
So it had a $20 million opening weekend here. Wow. And I know it had that extra day lock because it came out on a Wednesday here when movies traditionally come out on a Thursday. Yeah. But even still, you're kind of like, that's one day.
Yep. That's insane.
Unbelievable.
Coming at number two is John Wick Chapter 4, still kicking goals.
Hell yeah.
But look at the gap, 2.48 million.
Oh, it's at school holidays.
Look at the gap.
School holidays here, but also like the Super Mario Brothers is just so accessible for everyone. Yeah. Like the amount of people who are not 6 and under, who are actually actively going to this movie and watching it and enjoying it. So like bully to you. It's astounding. It's truly astounding. Cinema's back, baby.
Well, you know, number three is Air, and I'm so freaking happy with that.
I'm so happy.
I'll tell you how happy I am with that.
I'm so happy, and I know technically it's not like a box office success worldwide.
Do you know what?
It's so good.
Yeah, 2.1 million, total of 5.47 million. For Australia, that's pretty freaking good.
I'm happy with that. There, yeah,
that's
totally
pretty freaking good.
And considering it's coming out on Amazon in May, so because it is technically, I think people forget, an Amazon Studios production. So
yeah,
it will be on
so
available
Warner
to watch
Brothers
on Prime.
Did the
theatrical side
theatrical,
of stuff.
Yeah, Amazon do the thing. That's a. Do you know what they should do that with? Like a lot more of their movies.
Big ticket
movies.
And yeah, give it to like a proper distributor, yeah.
Like Netflix and stuff should take note and do totally. That. But then I think Knives Out, The Glass Onion.
Yeah, like the one-week cinema release.
Because of it on Netflix. Because so many people went to the movies. A, it was a holiday period.
Yep.
I don't know.
And the demand,
how
but
do
even
you
the...
Find the balance, right?
Even the demand for it after that cinema week release was so crazy. But then we had to wait another like 6 weeks until it came out on Netflix. And by the time that came around, I know it's more in our nature based on our work, but that time had come and gone for me. Like, I had no interest in watching it in December because so much else had come out and so much else was coming out that we were working on. I was like, I don't have time to watch Glass Onion again. So yeah.
I think I watched it on New Year's Day with like with the family.
Totally.
And I fell asleep. Not because it was boring, just like
because it's also New Year's Day. Like I think I was lucky to wake up on New Year's Day after the New Year's Eve I had. So
nice. And rounding out the top five is your current film of the year, Mafia Mama.
Mafia Mama. Or in its opening weekend.
Mafia Mama.
Mafia Mama. Mama Mafia is what I think it should have been called. That seems to roll off the tongue a little bit better.
It sure does.
And this was its opening weekend, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Another movie that's going to Paramount Plus in like a week or two.
So I knew this because it's... So Paramount distributed it theatrically in Australia, but it was Bleecker Street in the States. So it wasn't getting a big release regardless, and it was going streaming pretty quick. So and I'm not shocked not many people came out for it as
it's
well.
It's definitely a streaming movie.
Totally.
Look, I think I liked it a lot more than you and
you did. Yeah, you did.
But
I wonder if that has to do with the amount of wine that was ingested beforehand.
Yeah, well,
I had two glasses.
Right.
How many did you have? No. two plus three plus four.
So here's the thing, right? Paramount, arrive at 6 for a 7 o'clock start.
That's an hour.
There's probably a photo wall. It's probably going to be really busy because it was like the last night before Easter holidays.
That's right. So yeah.
They're probably just thinking it's going to be really busy. No, we get there, wine, champagne, food, open bar.
So good. Wow. I mean, we got gelato. So that's all right. Yeah.
Oh, we didn't get fucking gelato.
But you got an open bar.
I would not have been able to do it. So by the time I got to the cinema, I'd been drinking for an hour.
Yeah.
So any word that came out of Toni Collette's mouth, I was just laughing.
I mean, I get that. I totally get it. And like, I think I went into the movie. I made the mistake for me personally of watching the trailer about 10 minutes before I left for the screening. Cause I was I was showing it to my partner. She's like, what are you watching tonight? Cause she doesn't come to every screening with me, but she was like, what are you watching tonight? And I was like, just watch this. And I hadn't watched the trailer. And then I watched it and I went, I was like, I gotta sit through this. And in fairness, I'll be like, I genuinely think it was like a bad movie. I didn't give it a good review at all, but I understood the appeal for those who would enjoy it. It's just so silly. It's a silly, campy movie that like tries really hard to be funny. Do you know? I know we're not talking about Mafia Mama today, but
surprise,
Mafia Mama review. Toni Collette's husband in the film that, you know, causes
the dopey guy
was like, he was in a different time period to everyone else. He was like, was that part of his character? Of, like he's reliving the 90s, early 2000s, right? Yeah. I was like, hold up a second. Like, are you that caught in the past? And also Toni Collette, why are you still with this guy? But hey, that's part of the film. Eat, pray, fuck. I'm all for it.
Yeah. anyway. I think I didn't know who directed it.
Catherine Hardwicke.
And
director
when it got
Twilight.
To the end and I saw the director, I was like, what? What?
I will give props to Bleecker Street for their promotion of the film because they did do a really funny promotional video that was, what if Mafia Mama's trailer had the Twilight filter? And it was Catherine Hardwicke with like the blue green that like makes... that everyone makes fun of how Twilight looks, and they do the whole Mafia Mama trailer with that blue green hue over the top. And I was like, I'll give props to that. It's good self-awareness from Catherine.
Sidebar, Twilight trying to come in on the Harry Potter TV series. Apparently we're also getting a Twilight TV series.
Oh my God. I can't believe it.
Like I can, cause so much in the books was left out. So I can believe it. But I'm also like,
do we need it?
Well, also that, yeah. And like
also that for the Harry Potter
too. What service would it go to? Because
Because Lionsgate are just trying to ship it out, hey? And I guess they've got Peacock with the Continental, so I'm guessing Peacock would probably try and jump in on that. I'm guessing.
Yeah, maybe. True. Maybe. Well, they'd probably want to put it on a streaming service that people actually watch. Anyway. We're not here to really talk about any of this stuff.
Speaking of streaming services.
I just wanted to...
This movie was supposed to be on a streaming service.
Yeah, look, and I think we have very different opinions on this movie.
I'm excited. I'm excited to talk about it.
We're talking about Evil Dead Rise. Now, this is the fifth Evil Dead film. And this one takes it out of the cabin and into a suburban apartment.
Yes. Tell me what you thought.
Look, I'm going to be upfront. I don't have an attachment to this franchise.
Okay.
So a lot of the praise and garner that I've heard are from people that love this franchise.
Mm.
I don't have that attachment. I was just watching it as a movie.
Like a horror film itself.
So my opinion is not coming from that.
Yeah, totally.
So if I come across as harsh, as I've been told, it's because I have no attachment to this franchise whatsoever.
No, fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was fantastic. I didn't think it was shit. It's just another horror film.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
In an old franchise that's trying to be revived is just the impression that I got.
Yeah.
However, the performances from, in particular, I can't believe I've written their names out like
Alyssa Sutherland.
How do I not remember it? Alyssa Sutherland and Lily Sullivan. It's the double S that it's throws double me every time.
Yeah, yeah. Sutherland and Sullivan. Yeah.
Ugh. And Jaden Daniels as well. I really liked their performances. They were fantastic.
Yeah.
They delivered. They were great. It just felt like just another horror movie.
Yeah.
And the blood felt very over the top, which I know. It's meant to be after. Haven't you seen the other five films?
You cut me off just before I started saying that.
It's 2022. You shouldn't, like, people will be coming to this for the first time, potentially.
Yeah, absolutely,
So, I don't know. I wasn't wowed by it, I will say. I'm with the audience on the 85% Rotten Tomato score.
Right, because it's about 90 at the moment, I think, for
critics. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And just to quickly, cheekily plug that I spoke with Alyssa and Lily for the film. I did, and for Novastream, and they were fantastic. One of the most, like, genuinely saying this in the most heartfelt way, one of the most fun interviews I've ever been a part of. They were great. Both from Brisbane. I'm from Brisbane, so we obviously all connected on that level. But that's on Novastream.
You could all sit down and then drink your ginger wine in your ribs.
I got them coming over for a ginger wine tonight because everyone in Brisbane knows each other. We're a small little town. So that's on Novastream Network and the YouTube video as well. So you can see how much fun we had. But I will also second the performances. I think Alyssa Sutherland, who is Ellie, who you already know from the trailers, but becomes possessed by the demon. She is, everyone is running from her. She has three kids in the film. And then Lily Sullivan's Beth is her sister, is brilliant. She, like, the physicality of her performance is stunning. The way she moves around is very unsettling. Her smile is very unsettling, which I know they use, like, a little bit of CGI to touch up and make a little more eerie, but she has this ability. She used to be a model. And she also told us in the interview, she used to be a gymnast, and she used elements of those things to bring that to the character, to make it just a real unhinged physical performance.
Yeah.
I thought Lily Sullivan was great as Beth. I think she kind of plays, like, the badass heroine really well. And because she has a lot of, like, for me anyway, she has a bit of more of an emotional like stakes in the film with, like, having to get in touch with her maternal side, so to say. So I think that was good. I think their dynamic together was really well. And I genuinely believed them as sisters on screen. I thought they had really great chemistry together. And I thought the kids were brilliant. I thought all three of them were great. I liked that it felt, and this was, like, atmospherically, tonally, and the characters themselves, it had this like real punk rock feel to it. It was this kind of fuck you, I don't care attitude, but it felt sincere and it didn't ever push you away from the characters. Like, you know, you felt the family dynamic, but they were cool. Like Ellie's like basically running a tattoo parlor in her house. The son wants to be a DJ. Like they're doing all this really cool shit. In general, I really loved this movie. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's a good mix of the violence and the brutality from the 2013 remake, which is gory as fuck. But that's a real sadistic movie. I think that's a really dark and disturbing movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas I think this one has a bit more of the sentimentality and the fun of the original trilogy, which is more campy and a lot more comedic, more comedy horror than it is horror. I think Evil Dead Rise has more fun with the premise and whatnot, but it never feels like a parody of horror. It does still feel like a horror film that you can enjoy. I don't think it manages to get the tones done really well.
Yeah.
In saying that, my biggest issue, and I actually didn't, I've seen this twice. I'm lucky enough to see it twice already. And my biggest issue that I only noticed on the second time is it does take a little while to get going.
Really?
I didn't notice it the first time. But on the second one, I was like, oh, I don't remember it taking, but in like, I shouldn't say it's my biggest problem because I also like how it sets up the family dynamic and stuff.
Mm.
But there, I think there was just a little bit too much start, stop for maybe the first half an hour, maybe first 40 minutes. And then once Ellie's possessed, it is batshit crazy for the next, like just under an hour.
Yeah.
But that might even just be I knew what was coming. So I was excited to get to that. So I wouldn't necessarily call that a criticism. It's just something I noticed the second time around.
Yeah. Now look, this one was directed by Lee Cronin. Did you think maybe it would have been better under Raimi or?
Ooh, no, good question. What are
your thoughts on the direction change?
I'm going to say no, just because I think for those who haven't watched Evil Dead, and know the name Sam Raimi. He did the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man trilogy. He did all three of those. Mm-hmm. But most recently, obviously, was Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, which I praised for its horror sentimentalities at the end. I liked that it was, for a Marvel movie, more of a horror film. Like, it was scary for a Marvel film, you know, which is a cop-out to some people, but I think it's actually praiseworthy. Sam Raimi has this really fantastic ability of making camp enjoyable and not feel hammy and forced.
Yeah, yeah.
I listened to an interview with Lee Cronin where he said that Sam Raimi approached him after seeing Cronin's first movie, The Hole in the Ground, which I haven't seen, saying that they're looking at rebooting Evil Dead, but Raimi wasn't going to come back to direct. He liked the direction that 2013 was taking it, and he's like, what would you do differently? Mm. So I think Raimi is interested in exploring different avenues of the Evil Dead world and how different filmmakers will play with it. So okay. I think it would have been a different movie. I genuinely do. I think it would have leaned more into that camp horror again rather than more fun horror, I guess you could say.
Well, look, Lee Cronin's also credited as the writer.
Yeah, he soul wrote and directed it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that's... And again, we'll talk about it. This was meant to go to HBO Max directly.
Yes.
Not originally set for cinematic release. Do you think they did the right thing by releasing it to cinemas? Because I think yes.
I absolutely do. Yeah.
I think it's a movie you can take your friends who you took to saw Scream 6 with, and Megan. You can now go see Evil Dead Rise. That's like three really solid horror movies
absolutely.
In the space of what, 4 months?
4 months, if we thought we were treated well for horror last year, this year is going to look pretty bloody good.
And look, I'm going to throw the Pope's Exorcist in. I know you didn't like it. I liked it.
I had fun with it, though. Like, it was bad. It's a bad movie, but that last half an hour got me. I was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of fun.
Yeah. So it's the kind of movie that you definitely want to take your friends to that love horror movies. And I think you'll have a good time collectively, did with those others that we just mentioned.
Yeah, totally. It's such an audience reaction movie too, with some of the violence and some of the lines. Like when she's like, mummy's with the maggots now. She's like, I wanted to, you know, we had such a fun day out and I wanted to cut you all open and get inside your bodies. And in our cinema, everyone's like, you know, like everyone has those moments. And obviously, I'm sure it was the same in your screening. The big moment that everyone talks about is the cheese grater scene, right?
Mm.
That got a reaction out of our, well, I will say it got a reaction out of our audience, but the speakers were turned up so fucking loud and out. Like it was, we were in Dolby Atmos and it was so, so loud that I actually walked out with ringing ears, which is kind of cool, but like it was so atmospheric. But that cheese grater scene, everyone groaning and just, like we're cringing like, now talking I'm about
like,
it.
Ooh,
it's gross.
Yeah.
It's gross. Yeah. So, but yeah, like it's genuinely a fun movie to watch with an audience. And obviously I think it would have lost a little bit of that impact on HBO Max. It doesn't stop people from, you invite your friends over for pizza and beers and watch Evil Dead Rise the night it comes out. But this is such a fun atmospheric film too. And I think you get sucking in. It feels like a big scale movie despite all predominantly being set in one location.
Yeah,
I would say like 90% of the movie takes place in this, 95% even takes place in this high-rise building and the car park below, you know. What did you think of the opening, the cold open in the at the lake?
I liked it.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. It was
cool.
I think that got me in straight away and then lost me a little bit.
Once it did the one day earlier?
Yeah. So, but I think that's how
that's how I felt about it, like just like kind of that stop start sort of thing. But that cold open is brilliant, and obviously they link back to it at the end. But there's cool throwbacks there. Like there's a scene in the original Evil Dead where one of the possessed is like reading cards, like a deck of cards that she can't see, and then when this possessed lady is like reading out like Wuthering Heights. It's really well done and it's really creepy. And then we get the brutality and the violence immediately. When someone gets scalped. So this movie doesn't hold back on the violence either.
It is very,
I would say it's less gory than the 2013 one, but I think less blood, less like actual blood, because there's, I don't know when the last time you watched the 2013 one was, but I rewatched it recently. That's bloody. And that one had like with the guy who gets stabbed with the syringe like 100 times in the face, or like the machete through the kneecap, like there is some really fucks. And it literally rains blood at the end of that movie. So
this is probably a really good time to note this movie is rated R in Australia.
Take the kids, take the family.
So if you're, you know, living in Melbourne and go to see The Pope's Exorcist and there's a couple of 3-year-olds, 7-year-olds in the audience.
Oh God.
Hearing a child say, "I'm going to fuck you" to Russell Crowe.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. And I'm sitting there going, anytime now, you can take your children out.
You can take your kids out. It's fine.
And they
That's whack. that's full
and
on.
That was MA. This is like,
This is properly R-rated violence. Yeah. Like it does not hold back. So
definitely do not take your kids.
Just a word of advice.
Yeah. Just a little tip.
Yeah.
So we don't have a turnaround time for HBO Max at this stage.
No, we don't.
Because of the transition to Max. So we'll see what happens. I hope it does well.
We'll see how much money it makes too. I mean, there's been such a big build up for it as well. Like it did South by Southwest with its premiere, really like Fright Fest. It had a really good reaction, and then they've done a pretty big global tour with it, or at least like the UK and the United States.
Insane.
Marketing's been all over, all over the place with this. So like they want it to do well. It's obviously tougher being R18. Like you restrict literally. Yeah. You know, anyone who's under 18 from watching it. So hopefully it does
well. Tickets online and sneak on into the cinema. What?
Or just buy the tickets and just support the movie without watching it. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, or just watch it.
You can do that.
I would have watched it as a under 17-year-old. Absolutely.
Totally. Yeah.
But I mean, like the budget here, $15 million. Like it, you know, if it makes $50 million worldwide, that's a success.
Exactly. It would have made more than it made on HBO Max, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So
either way, it's looking up. Final thoughts.
I had a lot of fun with it. I genuinely think it's one of my, I like for April, as far as we're into the year, it's one of my favorites of the year so far. Great. I had a lot of fun with it. How about you?
Cool. Look, I think I had less fun than you did.
I love horror movies. I like,
and so do I.
So I know you do as well. Mm. So I'm like, it's quite interesting.
I don't know. Yeah. I think I'm going to see it again.
Yep.
I've got a busy weekend because I also want to see Beau is Afraid again because I don't know how to tackle that review.
Carve out 3 hours for that. Yeah.
Yeah. So look, I'm interested to see it again and see how it goes in a public screening.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm almost tempted to go see it in 4D.
Ooh. Oh,
because that could be fun.
That could be real fun, especially the demon's point of view scene. Oh, fuck, that'd be really fun.
It could be interesting. So, look, I didn't enjoy it as much as you did, but it's still a good film.
Yes, totally. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know how it fits into the franchise.
It's pretty detached. It's reasonably detached from the franchise.
You call it a spin-off, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like what a series would do where they like take the basic concept of like this Book of the Dead that has the power to possess people is just now in a new location, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. Like that's kind of as connected pretty as you're going to get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Well, that is Evil Dead Rise. It is in cinemas right now. Just want to say a huge thank you to Warner Brothers Australia for organizing the interviews.
Yes.
And the press screenings for both of us to go and see it.
Yes, yes, yes.
What did you think? Let us know in the comments below, or you can send us an email, popcultureessentials@gmail.com. Before we go, we have one more thing to do.
Yes, we do.
Nick, what is essential for you this week? What's your pop culture essential?
Essential for me this week is, now, this might be a little controversial because of how divisive it is. But okay. I am going to implore people to go to the cinema, despite what their preconceived notions may be, to watch Beau is Afraid.
Oh, okay, cool. Great.
What did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to talk about a Netflix show.
Oh, no. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I'm absolutely not talking about that. No, I would implore people. That's because I am a fan of Ari Aster's films, but this was something completely different. But I think there's an argument to be had that, yes, it is 3 hours long and it is, you know, an investment of your time. And there are going to be elements of the movie that not a lot of people like without going too deep into it.
Yeah.
But there is something to be admired about a director or a filmmaker who wants to make something so bold and so different and quite unlike a lot of things we've seen before. And the only way, whether it works for you or not, you might have a filmmaker who has that same vision but is not getting the opportunity to do it because we keep shutting down other filmmakers' visions by not going to the cinema to see it. Hmm. So I would implore people to give it a shot. Go watch Beau is Afraid. You might walk away and be like, that was actually trash. But I loved it. I had a good time with it. Mm. And it then influences companies like A24 or people like Roadshow who are distributing here. They're like, okay, there is a market for this. There is an audience for this. And we want to try and take more risks. We saw it happen with Babylon, Damien Chazelle. Didn't work for everyone. And it was a box office bomb. But there was enough people who appreciated his vision to be like, okay, I'd like to see more of this as well. We let Spielberg do it with The Fabelmans, box office bomb. Like the thing is, but some people loved it. Some people's favorite movie of the year was The Fabelmans. So I think my real pop culture essential is go and support filmmakers who are making bold decisions, whether it's especially if you're a fan of just movies in general, whether it's your vibe or not. Because one day your favorite filmmaker might be in the same situation and they might get a chance to do something that will completely wow you. How about you, Alistair? What is your essential for the week?
Look, I have spent a little bit of time at home and I'm used to be really good with streaming shows and I've been a little bit shit lately. So I had some stuff to catch up on. Look, I watched Beef before all of the controversy came out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's such a fantastic show.
I have heard it's brilliant, like, but yeah, it's one of those ones where you've got to make a moral
again, it's
choice.
It's A24. I didn't know that when I started watching.
Oh, true.
It.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I saw the logo and went, what?
Nice.
Okay, cool. This is great. And the guy that everyone's talking about is not really in the show that much. So
Yeah.
But that's not what I'm here to talk about. In my travels, after I watched that, a suggestion came up on Netflix for a Aussie show, which I was surprised that I heard nothing about this.
Right.
Called Well Mania.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it stars Celeste Barber.
Celeste Barber.
Who is a, I'm going to say, social media influencer.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, like comedian, I guess, turned, as well. Yeah.
Turned actress. Look, it's such a fucking good show.
Right.
Basically, she plays a 40-year-old woman, because, you know, she is one.
Yeah.
working in New York as a food writer, has to come home for a family emergency, loses her green card, and is forced to stay at home and go on a wellness plan to pass her medical to get back to the US.
Right. Okay.
Really complicated.
I was like, it's an interesting premise for a show,
like,
but yeah.
That's like the base level of the show. So right. It's 8 25-minute episode. So it's like over before
flies
you know
by.
It. It's so funny.
Okay.
It's so funny. It's so well written. All of the actors are unknowns, which is even better because you don't have like, oh, you know, I've seen you in that. Like, you know, there's an Aussie show.
Yeah, totally.
It's the same people doing the rounds in every show.
Hey.
This is a fresh cast and it is fantastic.
All right.
Funny. I think Rhiannon would really like it.
All right. Yeah. I'll get it added to the list.
I don't know if you'll like it.
I'll give it a go. I met Celeste Barber at the Brisbane International Film Festival. Actually, we'd both had a couple of drinks, but she was nice. She was quite nice to us. Yeah.
She's amazing. I love her. Mm. She's fantastic. Can't wait. Cannot wait to see more. They did leave it open for a season 2.
Okay. Whether,
That is Well Mania on Netflix.
Nice.
Cool. And that is it from us. What have you been watching, reading, playing? Let us know in the comments below. Nick, where can people find your stuff?
My stuff is on Instagram and Twitter at Nick's FlixFix. Also on Letterboxd if you want to see my little reactions to movies once I leave the cinema. Alternatively, you can also find me at NovastreamNetwork.com. Interviews and reviews galore going on there. Or if you head to my Instagram bio, there's like 4 different podcasts I got going on at the moment. So when I'm, you know, not watching movies, writing, recording, filming, or talking, I'm usually watching movies, writing, filming, recording, or talking.
I thought you would be drinking ginger wine in your ripped jeans.
I'll be doing that tonight, that's for sure. I've got a lovely lineup of German film festival screeners to get through. So that's French. How about you? Where are you on
already
the internet?
Already had that one, idiot. You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Alistair. And you can find my streaming and movie stuff on NovaStream and my gaming stuff over at the AU Review. So that is it. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will be back with another episode soon.